Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfagal of Olami 613 with a live studio audience. That was really impressive. We have new members of a live studio audience. You ladies did excellent. We are looking forward to tremendous feedback about our live studio audience. Yes, folks, there's big news. There's a lot going on in the Jewish world. Who would have thunked it? You know, we're approaching Purim, and there might be a major war between the Jewish people and the Persians. Again, crazy. All right, we'll get to that later. But an interesting Olympic news, the Winter Olympics concluded. I have to say that I missed much of the Olympics. However, I did hear of some amazing highlights of the games, and the Jewish people represented in our USA hockey victories, okay? And the goalie for the women's team was Jewish, and their amazing victory over Canada. However, the goalie for Canada and the women's team was also Jewish, but okay, life goes on, you know, meaning and purpose in the Jewish people, so I'm sure she will recover. And either way, okay, but then the men's team, which also beat Canada, just so you know, there's a little bit of a rabbi chat, okay, for Jewish outreach rabbis in our Olami network. And there is a very outspoken Canadian rabbi who actually was part of the, you know, Canadian Mounties and in the Canadian Army and the whole thing. And he is very loud and boisterous when it comes to Canadian hockey victories over America. He has been cricket silence since these last two games. Anyway, I didn't want to pour any salt into any wounds, so I went to my higher self and did not mention anything about those victories. Nevertheless, but there are the Hughes brothers, Quinn and Jack. And Jack was the hero. He got two teeth knocked out, one fully and the other one half. It looked a beautiful smile, right? And that penalty supposedly was consequential, and Jack went on and won the overtime thriller 2-1. Now, of course, the Jewish world is going crazy. A nice Jewish boy, he won the Olympic gold medal for America. Ah, such nachas, Yiddish nachas. Okay, so God bless him. He seems like a great guy, the whole family. The mom was an Olympian. She was the coach, also one of the coaches on the women's Olympic team. It seems like there's like a Jewish dynasty of this Hughes family. Not sure the dad's Jewish. Don't know. Not going to comment. But mom's Jewish means you're in. Okay, so mom and, yeah, Ellen Weinberg Hughes. There it is. And so it's great. Love it when Jews represent. I remember when Carrie Strug, our family actually was close friends with the Strug family. When Carrie Strug won the Olympic gold for the women's gymnastics in, I don't know, 1823, whenever that was, way back when. That was a great moment for the Jews, certain Jewish pride that we could contribute. And whenever Jewish athletes contribute, it's great. This one seems to have reached fever pitch. And again, I don't want to be the Grinch that stole the joy of a Jewish guy winning it for the team. Let's give praise and all due kudos. But on cue, here we go. Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, of which we've been calling out pretty much the last 2 weeks of their approach to fighting anti-Semitism. Now, Mr. Non-Jew, you should really like us. We'll just explain that it's inappropriate to not like Jews. And yet, sadly, the secularization of the Jewish people is the potentially one of the factors that causes this mystical, divine reaction for the non-Jews to remind us that we are different. And he says, quote, beyond his incredible skill on the ice, Jack makes history as a proud representative of the American Jewish community. reminding us that the Jewish people are interwoven into America in her 250th year. Mazel tov, Jack. Now, it seems like nice, cute words, and it's all great, but if you get to the depth of it, what is he saying? We Jewish people, that's all we want. We just want to be intertwined, interwoven into the fabric of America. We just want to be like everyone else. And so, mazel tov, Jonathan, you have just now confirmed the thesis that will actually increase anti-Semitism. Because guess what? In the end of the day, the non-Jews who don't like us aren't going to say, oh, wow, they scored a goal for us. We should really stop hating the Jews. Is that really what's going to do? No. The anti-Semites will tuck their tail between their legs and go back to their hole where they came from when we are proud Jews, Jewishly. Okay, so now, Jack, take your Olympic gold and put on tefillin. And put the gold medal around your neck, put on tefillin, and then that's what's going to fight anti-Semitism. That's how we are going to defeat it. Okay, so that's a little follow-up from the last couple weeks, but we are going to move on to positive Jewish messaging, and boy, oh boy, is it a perfect time of year to do it, because we are in Purim season. Yes, Amazon is abuzz all over the world trying to keep up with the costumes that have been ordered by the Jewish people, being ordered by the Jewish people, because Purim is coming up outside of Israel on Monday night, March 2nd, and Tuesday, March 3rd. So I'd like everyone now, you might be driving or in Pilates, if you could take a little quick second, and what I would like you to do is mark down that you need to hear, go find a Megillah reading on Monday night, March 2nd, and then Tuesday, March 3rd, you need to hear the Megillah again. Now, Rabbi, I work then. Okay, so there are many early morning readings. You can make this happen. And in addition, there's one mitzvah that gets lost, and that is the meal. There's a meal that we sit down and we celebrate that Hashem was with us and He is with us. And that is one of the four main mitzvahs of Purim. Reading the Megillah or hearing the Megillah at night and the day. Giving food gifts to two types of food to one other person, okay? And also gifts to the poor. Gifts to the poor is enough for one meal for two different poor people. So some people say it's $20. Other people say up to $40. The bottom line is this is a day for charity, not to give to the opera, not to give to any university, but to give to poor Jewish people. If you do not know poor Jewish people, there are many wonderful options online. You can contact me as well. And this is really a time to give tzedakah to help our Jewish brothers and sisters who need assistance. The last mitzvah is on Tuesday in the afternoon. And we sit down and we have a meal. This meal is absolutely crazy, unbelievable, incredible. It's hard to describe unless you've been to one. But get yourselves to that meal. Cancel your hair appointment, your mani-pedi. Move your doctor's appointment. Tuesday, this is Purim. And part of what we try to do at Olami 613 is to rebrand Purim. It's not just a Sunday school carnival and costume party. It's not a Jewish Halloween. The commentators say that Yom HaKippurim, which is Yom Kippur, ka in Hebrew, the kaf, it means like. So Yom HaKippurim is like Purim, meaning there is a certain level of Yom Kippur that is like Purim, meaning that Purim is on a higher level. Rabbi, how can it be that Purim is on a higher level than Yom HaKippurim? And the commentators say that it's very easy to be holy when you're fasting, but it's much harder to be holy when you're eating and drinking. And that is the level of what we are engaged in. Their tradition is to drink wine because that is how the miracle was done in the Purim story with the meals with Ahasuerus. And Vashti, she was killed because Ahasuerus was drunk with wine. And then later on, Esther's meal that she invited both Ahasuerus and Haman to her party, and there was wine there, and the salvation happened through the wine. Therefore, we ourselves need to celebrate through wine. All right, so let's get into it. We obviously cannot do the entire Purim story of the Megillah. However, we're going to talk some themes and we're going to do some laser strikes. The Megillah is literally one of my favorite texts to read, to learn, and to teach. All right, so let's do this all together. All right, the title of this podcast is Thunder at Sinai, Secrets in Shushan. Sounds like a great Netflix series, right? Well, the book is actually much better than the potential movie. And I want to give a shout out to Rabbi Yitz Lerner of Chappelle's and MRC, who came to visit us this week. And he gave a class, basically, which is the basis of this Dvar Torah that I'm going to share. So I want to give a big shout out to him. And I tinkered a little bit with the title. And really, Thunder at Sinai, Secrets in Shushan. Want to give a big shout out to Rabbi Yitz Lerner. And we love when our students are able to go learn at his institutions in Jerusalem. All right. So what is going on over here? And the basic idea goes like this. There are two basic types of miracles. There is a miracle where God suspends the laws of nature, where he does things that are what we would call miraculous, right? When you say, that's a miracle, right? Actually, maybe the miracle on ice would be a good example we could talk about later because, all right, well, we'll see. But a classic, when people talk about a miracle, they mean that the laws of nature were broken, that the sea splits. Water does not go up, okay? Water goes down, right? If water is going to make into 12 distinct channels, as our rabbis tell us, it wasn't just one split. And if there are going to be 10 miraculous plagues that all the Egyptians are impacted and the Jews are not, and etc. And then we go off to Mount Sinai, where we have a midrash that says crazy. It says that that Hashem holds Mount Sinai over the Jewish people, it's allegorical language, and he says, if you accept the Torah, great, but if not, there will be your burial place. Now, that's very uplifting and enlightening. the teacher with the belt out saying, you better listen. So what is really going on here? And why would God want to force us to accept the Torah? Wouldn't it be, why is he doing that? And the answer the commentators, most of the commentators take this approach, is that it wasn't that God was forcing them to accept the Torah. It was that everything the Jewish people had been through up until Mount Sinai was so compelling, was so clear. The laws of nature were broken. God demonstrated he was in control of everything from the lowliest Nile all the way up to the sky and everything in between, human, animal, plant, life, even human interactions. He was totally in control of everything. And then so when God says, hey, you want the Torah? We say, yeah, Naaseh v'nishma. We're going to, you say jump, we say how high. And therefore, on a certain level, we were compelled because our notion of Hashem was so clear that there was almost no free will. It's as if God did too good of a job, that he took our free will away. And that is what the rabbis are telling us when God held the mountain over us and quote-unquote forced us. It wasn't that he was forcing us to the mountain. It was that everything that he had done up until Mount Sinai revealed himself so clearly that we really basically had no choice because it was so clear. Now fast forward to Shushan about 1,000 years later, and the classic way to understand the story of Esther and the Purim story is that God's name is not mentioned in all 10 chapters of Megillah. What does that mean? It's like, how can you, it's like a car without an engine. It's like a kitchen without a stove. It's like, I don't know, a stadium without seats. It's just, it's, how can you have a book in the, how can you have a book in the Bible without the mention of God? And so the commentators explain, because the whole story of Purim is that Hashem is hidden, his actions are hidden, everything looks natural, nothing supernatural here, folks. Life is just going on, and things might seem quirky or weird or bizarre, but there's nothing quote-unquote miraculous. So that is called a Nes Nistar. That is called a hidden miracle. That is the secrets in Shushan of the title. Thunder at Sinai is the open miracles, and the secrets in Shushan is that Hashem is whispering. He's working through events in quote-unquote real time that the New York Times could have them as their headlines and no one would say that they're miraculous. What Rabbi Lerner was saying in the class that he delivered was that he was confused in the last 2 years. He has seen so many things that are quote-unquote miraculous that he doesn't know if they're Sinai miracles or if they're Shushan miracles, meaning that when thousands of rockets are shot and there's such minimal damage done to the Jewish people in Israel in two different incidents, is that luck? We're very grateful for the Iron Dome and all the other things, and thank God that they are there, and that is our human effort, but still it is staggering beyond belief. So as he kept seeing things barely miss, he was talking about, he was on his merpeset, his balcony, and just watching missiles fall and just barely miss things. And it is absolutely crazy. Is that a coincidence? Is that luck? Is that blind fate? Is that, and then when you see them over and over and over again, is that a sign? Is that an open, revealed miracle? Is that breaking laws of nature? At a certain point, the odds are stacked so much against you. Is that called an open miracle or a hidden miracle? Well, I'll tell you, the one that gets me is to think and consider that every single hostage got out. I still, to this day, this is Purim to me, because people can look at that 250, whatever it was, hostages, dead and alive, were returned. If you asked me the Vegas odds when they were taken of everyone getting back, either to continue their lives or for a kosher Jewish burial, I would have told you 0.00. There's no way Hamas is ever going to let it go. And especially when it got down to the last 20-ish, there's no way they're going to release everyone. It doesn't make sense. Why would they do it? And 2 years to the day of October 7th is when they were released. And then finally, the final bodies were recovered. And so we see here an absolutely unbelievable opportunity where we can test ourselves. Are we just going to say, you know, it was the strength of our army and our negotiating skills that, you know, did it, and it was Trump and it was Witkoff and whatever, and God bless all those people, yes, but is it, what about Hashem? What about that? Is it a miracle? And you could explain it both ways. You could explain it both ways. That's what the secrets in Shushan is all about. It is secretive. Hashem is whispering. Do we hear the whispering? And then that's why this holiday is so relevant to us. Do we hear the whispers of Hashem in our own life? Do we hear the whispers of Hashem in our own lives? Hashem is speaking to us all the time. And that is what the powerful message of Esther is. And the rabbis say that even after Mashiach, Messiah, is going to come, Purim is going to be the holiday that we're going to still celebrate. Why? Because if we could recognize Hashem even in the times where he was hidden, then that we'll merit to see Hashem and bask in his glory when he pulls back curtain number 3 from Let's Make a Deal. And he says, hi, here I am. I am Hashem. And that is why Purim is so relevant to us. And that's why, by the way, we drink wine, because sometimes we are stubborn people and we can't let our rational, well, you know, it was really Witkoff and Trump and all these people, and they did it, and God bless them, and I want to thank them. But sometimes our rational capacity covers over our ability to see the divine hand, and that's one of the reasons why we drink, because that reveals inside the inside truth that our neshama knows. We have an external mask of callousness, of an inability to see Hashem, and that's why we wear costumes on Purim, to sort of poke fun at ourselves. Oh, we're dressing up the mask? We're putting masks on the whole year. We're trying to be people that we're not, and we're not letting in that recognition and knowledge of the Almighty. That's why we wear masks, and that's why we drink, is to reveal our inner essence, which recognizes that the Almighty is with us, even in the secrets, in the whispers of wherever we live. And that is the power, and that's what we're celebrating, that this is not a one and done in Shushan, that this is an ongoing approach, that the Almighty has a relationship with us, and that is the joy of Purim. Why are we so happy? It's not just a Halloween. It's not just some fun party. It's because we feel the closeness to the Almighty, that He's here with us every day. Can you imagine living your day, your week, your month, your minutes, your hours with that feeling that the CEO of the universe, my loving parent, my loving Father in heaven, is with me, and everything that happens is purposeful and meaningful, and sometimes it's bitter and sometimes it's sweet, and sometimes it seems like it's a Haman day, and sometimes it seems like a Mordecai day, but we drink until we can't distinguish between both Haman and Mordecai. Why? Because ultimately they're both from Hashem, and they're both for our good. And that life is a life of joy. And that's why we drink. And that's why we celebrate. And that's why you need to clear your calendars on Tuesday, March 3rd, and get yourselves to a Purim meal. If you have any Jewish young professionals who would like to join us in our meal here in West Rogers Park, we would be delighted. God bless. Have an amazing, amazing Purim. And God willing, we will be back here right again next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivations.